Hello there, you're welcome to another beautiful episode of Kolavari Work Series. It's been a minute, but we are back. And excited.
We're back.
Yes, it feels so good to be back. Aziz is also here, as always. It's good to have him here. Kolavari Work Series is a podcast that is dedicated to exploring the fascinating world of work. My name is Zika, and I'm the host of this podcast. I think we'll just go straight to what we'll be talking about today. Today, we'll be looking into a very interesting topic. We'll be talking about artificial intelligence and the future of work. So this subject actually holds very significant importance because AI has become a widely discussed phenomenon. And there's several implications that AI has on humanity. So what we'll be doing today is unraveling the meaning of artificial intelligence, the impact on humanity, and how we're supposed to respond to it. So as we, you know, before we go forward, we would just want to let you know that this episode will be in two parts. So today we'll be looking at AI and the impact of work on individual basis, while in the second part, we'll be focusing on societal impact of artificial intelligence. As always, like I said earlier, Aziz is here. Hi, Aziz.
Hi, Zika.
It's good to be back. Yes.
We took a break in 2024.
Yes.
But we are back.
We are back. Back and better with more informative and exciting, you know, episode. We also have two other guests, Danny Johnson, who is the co-founder and principal analyst at Red Thread Research, as well as Olaolu Adjose, the head of engineering at Servient Finance. Aziz?
Yeah, thanks, Zika. Good to be back.
Back
with this episode. And I think for me, it's a special episode. Why? This was recorded over 3 years.
Wow.
The first interview with Danny Johnson took place in 2023. The interview with Olaolu took place in 2024. And now,
we're 2025. We're recording. Wow.
I mean, and during that time, my view on AI evolved. And it's important. My view on AI became more balanced. That's how I would put it. And I will say it like this. If you were going to find out the truth about climate change, who would you get that information from? The oil and gas industry?
No.
Exactly. Because the oil and gas industry contributes to climate change.
Yes.
Same thing with AI. If you were going to get information on the truth about AI, where would you get that information from? Would it be from companies who will benefit from its adoption or from other sources?
Other sources.
So for me, it was ensuring that what I knew about AI didn't just come from, you know, what was available in the public domain, which is from people who will benefit from its adoption, but also from other people as well. So that at the end of the day, you have a more
balanced
view of AI. So I think that's really what happened over the 3 years. And I would say it was Danny Johnson that helped me with this shift. Because she posted a comment on LinkedIn in 2023 and I responded, you know, and my response was that, well, we would learn about AI from other shifts that have happened previously. And her response was, this is different. So that this is different really made me to think about this differently. And I actually agree that this shift that we're experiencing cannot be compared with other shifts that we've had in the past. So that's really how my view on AI evolved over the last 3 years.
Okay, so what is artificial intelligence?
I think, as always, it's good to start with understanding the definition.
Yeah.
And I think let's start with the definition that Olaolu Adjose gave us during our interview.
So I would define AI, the very basic or very simplistic term, without a lot of cluttering, right? Things that human being does today that mimic demonstrate intelligence, right? We are creating programs, computer programs, that can do the same. An example would be humans think today, right? So we want computer system that are also able to acquire knowledge, process the knowledge, and inductively use that knowledge to solve problems, right? That's what a human does. And we do that effortlessly, right? So we're trying to get a computer system to simulate some of those kind of intelligence. So that means we can think, we can learn, and we can adapt, right? So any computer or artificial, that's why I say artificial, because it's not real. It's not like something that is found in nature. It is human created that can demonstrate the ability to think, learn, and adapt, or to use those learnings to solve problems. We say that's artificial intelligence.
Okay. I would kind of like paraphrase, and I would explain how I like to see artificial intelligence. What Laolu said is how you typically find AI defined. It's more of a tool that can do what humans currently do. That's basically the definition you get. But for me, I rather we look at it conceptually. And this is very important, because there is an idea behind artificial intelligence. At the end of the day, if we understand that idea, then we are better able to define what AI is. What was the goal behind AI in the first place? So I want to look at definitions given by two pioneers in the AI field. The first one is Mustafa Suleiman. Mustafa Suleiman is the co-founder of DeepMind. DeepMind was an early pioneer of AI. He's currently the CEO of Microsoft AI. And the second person's definition that I want us to look at is Ilya Sutskever. Sutskever was a co-founder of OpenAI. You remember OpenAI?
Yeah.
He was one of the board of directors that voted to oust Sam Altman. So he begins to tell you his view.
Yeah.
Okay. Currently, he's the co-founder of Safe Super Intelligence. So now let's listen to their definition of AI. Mustafa Suleiman defines AI as a new digital species. Listen, a new digital species. This is not a tool.
A species.
Digital species. Listen to Ilya Sutskever. He says, AI is digital brains inside large computers. You can tell that for them, AI is not about a tool.
Yeah.
It is a thing. It is something. It's not a tool. And it's important because that is the core idea of what AI is to them. Even though we can use AI as a tool, but conceptually, this generation of AI, the idea behind it is not to be used as a tool.
Brains.
You understand? AI was designed mimicking the brain, the neurons and the network. And in reality, we can write equations or what you call models or algorithms to define anything.
Okay, so do you want to explain further on that?
Okay, that's fine. I'll say it again. You can write equations, algorithms or models to describe anything. At its core, especially deep learning, AI relies on mathematical models to process information and make decisions. It's very simple. The same way you can determine the volume a cup of water can hold. Because if we assume the cup is a cylinder, the cylinder has a formula. I think it's pi r square h.
Yeah.
So if you solve that equation, you know the volume of water the cup holds, even if you do not actually try it out.
Yeah.
Do you understand? It's like,
yes,
equations.
Yeah.
Now, I would explain it further, and I'll explain it what happened during my master's program. I worked on a fuel cell. A fuel cell is like a battery, but this time it uses it combines hydrogen with oxygen to form water. In that process, electricity is generated. So that's what the fuel cell is. I worked on a solid oxide fuel cell. That's what I worked on. So my project was to compare the operation of an SOFC under hot condition versus a cold condition. Now, what I did was to write a model. Again, remember, a model is a set of equations.
Yeah.
So these models, what they do, they describe how those components will work. So I had a gasifier, I had a cleanup process, and I had a fuel cell. I didn't make these to try out how it was going to work. I wrote equations describing the gasifier, describing the cleanup system, describing the fuel cell. And when I solve the when those equations are solved using computer programs, it gives me an answer.
Yeah.
So in reality, you can model anything the same way you can model the brain. You understand? So
yes.
At the basis of AI and mathematical foundations, they are equations. You can call them models, you can call them algorithms. They are equations. You understand? If you solve those equations, you get an output. So let's remember that.
I think I understand better what you mean by why you said why you had to go to the founding fathers of AI, because what we have out there is different from what I'm understanding from what you're saying, and I think I'm following.
So let's continue. So like I said, at the core of AI are mathematical foundations: probability, linear algebra, and optimization. That's basically the core of AI. So just the same way you can write equations for physics. So for example, force is equal to mass times acceleration. And you can actually calculate the force of anything if you know the mass and the acceleration of that thing. The same way you can predict the output of the brain if you can write equations, models that describe how the brain functions.
Yes.
So when you typically the way the brain functions is that the brain receives input and it gives output. So the data that goes into that model is the input, and the AI model is able to simulate output that we receive
as response. Yeah.
You understand? But this time the response are human-like response because the models have been written to mimic the brain. So it's simple, but it's complex. You understand? So for example, today, if you type a prompt into ChatGPT, you are giving it input data.
Yeah.
It's going to use that input data to solve, and it will give you a response.
Yes.
So that's basically how it works. You understand? But it's just that this time, the response they are like human-like response because the models have been written to mimic the brain. So that's basically, I think it's a lot clearer. And I've done a couple of presentations and people kept trying to understand this AI thing. How does it work? I had to take out time to just provide simple examples that would make people understand how AI works.
Interesting. Okay, so what is the potential impact of artificial intelligence, and why do you think we should be concerned generally?
Very good question. Let's listen to an excerpt of the interview with Danny Johnson, then I would, add to it.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we're at a point in history where we have adopted technology as a part of our lives. So I'm not sure that was true at any of the other big influxes of technology, but now everyone carries around a supercomputer in their pocket. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think it's almost impossible to avoid AI or sidestep AI until we have a better handle on what it is, because it's being infused into every single thing we do. The other thing that is happening is we have some pretty big organizations with pretty substantial resources investing in it right now. And those organizations affect lots of aspects of our lives. You know what I mean? So Microsoft, Apple, Google, they're all going in heavily on this AI thing, and it affects every single thing that they put out, which means that it affects the things that we use on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And because they're investing in it, there's sort of this groundswell of I don't know that I would call it panic, but definitely some urgency around getting AI into other things so that they can compete or interface with some of these larger organizations that are going big on it.
Summarize my take out from Danny's comment. The pervasiveness of technology makes the impact of AI huge. Technology is everywhere. This was not the case years ago. So you cannot compare this shift to others. Mobile phone, social media, everything, the world is connected. Because of that connectedness and the pervasiveness of technology, it makes the impact of AI huge. So that's one reason why we should be careful and why we should be concerned. But I would also highlight some other things. The first one is that this is a new kind of tool. Traditionally, every tool humans have created required humans to operate those tools.
Yeah.
But with AI is different. With AI is different. AI can actually operate itself. So it is not your typical tool. The only thing it requires is your initial input or prompt, but AI can operate itself. So that's one. The second issue is what I call the black box problem. Now, unlike traditional software, AI operates as a black box. Yes, we feed it data and it produces results, but we do not fully understand the inner workings of how it reaches those conclusions. We do not fully understand. And this is how I would explain. Imagine when the car was invented. Imagine we didn't fully understand how the car operated. Would that not be of concern?
Definitely.
Exactly. And I'm going to refer to Jeff Hinton, often referred to as the godfather of AI. And I'm going to read what he said. This is Jeff Hinton, the godfather of AI. This is what he said. He said, "What we did as humans is design the learning algorithm." That's the equations, okay? "When the learning algorithm interacts with data, it produces complicated neural networks that are good at doing things, but we really don't understand how they do these things." That is of great concern. And this is the reality of AI. We have a tool, if I can refer to it as a tool, that can surpass human intelligence in certain areas, yet we do not know how it works. This is a profound and unprecedented development. That is my concern.
Now I'm concerned because before this this episode, I had the same knowledge of AI like, you know, we talked about initially. But now, breaking it down this way, truly. And now my question, especially, you know, this is a work series. So how would it impact job security? And what measures can be taken to mitigate unemployment?
Again, there are lots of views on this, but I would like us to listen to excerpts from both Danny Johnson and Laolu. Then I will come back and I would summarize and I will also add my own take to it as well. But let's start with listening to Danny Johnson.
Okay.
Disruptive is an interesting word. I think it's all going to be disruptive. It already is disruptive. So, for example, I'm in the middle of a learning technology study. I started collecting information in March, and the information that I collected on AI is likely outdated by now because so many things have happened between March and June of this year. It's just moving so dang fast. And so I guess if I had to choose one thing to use the word disruptive on, it would be the speed at which this is happening and the speed at which we need to adapt our organizations and our people to embrace these technologies in a really safe and logical way.
You know, back in the day, people would say, "I'm going to learn Microsoft Word or CorelDRAW," all the kind of things that you go learn in institutions. Now you don't need to do that. So that means even the kind of work, the kind of study you go for has been greatly disrupted by AI. How we learn already being influenced. So it means that it's not business as usual. It is not. Because it is bringing about, I'll give you a practical example. I think it was Hollywood, people who write script, and suddenly they began to revolt because a lot of those script adapted from maybe ChatGPT or whatnot. And the argument, that two arguments, that number one, this tool does not have the potential to create as much as they have. The second is that some of their materials are what is being used to train this AI. And the question to your producer, you want to drop your costs, right? You want to keep the profit margins really high. So, and sometimes there are ethical concerns to doing that. Because what you are laying off half of your staff, or just like Twitter recently, almost 80% gone, and you have 20% left. Whether AI is a part of that tool, or of course, he said majority of the code today, even 40% in Twitter, is written by AI, right? So that means that no job in court will be safe, right? Or say every single part of human life endeavors will be disrupted greatly. Either in the software, the people production, or creatives, or whatnot, legal system, bio system, medical system, every single thing has been disrupted. So you can't just think that. It definitely, that will create a lot of imbalance, right? Or inequality, economic inequality, right? Skill gap, because people now need to start learning how to use this tool, right? And so many other things. So that's what I see. It's really very unprecedented productivity for people who can use the tool or use the system, like you said, or people who are not able to harness or take advantage of the strength that it offers. They will find themselves lacking.
So, disruptive and unprecedented. That is what we are going into in the job market. So let's rethink the whole AI and job narrative. I know you'd have heard of this saying, and I actually believed it one time, that says that AI will not take your job.
Yeah.
Somebody that knows AI will take your job, right?
Yes.
That was, I actually believed it. But that presupposes that work remains the way work is right now.
Yeah.
It presupposes that humans would use AI to do their job, right?
Mm-hmm.
What if, like Laolu was saying, you don't need the humans to do the job? The AI can do the job from start to finish.
Hmm.
So it's more than just somebody that knows AI will take your job. It's that there might be no jobs in certain sectors or certain areas again. Mm, mm. I'll tell you why it's important. The more you realize where this is going, the truth, the more you are prepared for it and the more you make right choices. Because I don't want people to rest on their oars and say, well, all I need is just
to know how to learn some AI
and everything is fine.
Yeah.
Everything will not be fine. Because we are going into an unprecedented era, a disruptive era. That's one. And like Laolu mentioned, no area or no sector is safe. So we are talking about white-collar jobs, blue-collar jobs, creative roles, analytical roles, accounting, law. AI will reshape, will impact every area. And in some cases, it will not require human input or human assistance in doing the job. Sam Altman, some time ago, I think it was last year, he was talking about, there's a concept called universal basic income. And this is a situation whereby people will be paid for doing nothing. It's a possibility. We do not know.
Because AI will do everything.
Exactly. It's a possibility.
Wow.
It's a possibility. But the whole point is that, again, I don't want anybody to assume that they are sure what's going to happen. We do not know. So because of that posture, you want to take everything serious. Don't take anything for granted.
Yeah.
Don't assume if you learn some AI skills, it means things are okay. No. No. You understand? So that's the point that I'm driving at. And because of this, the responsibility for adapting AI's impact on jobs must be shared amongst individuals, the private sector, and the government. It's important. Government cannot leave this for private sector. You remember what Laolu said? Shareholders' concern is profitability. If they have to choose between profitability and people's job, they will choose profitability. So government has to be important, has a very important role to play in this. Together, we can put in place strategies and structures that can help us evolve in this era that is beneficial to all. That's my take on this. Any comments?
I was actually going to ask before you said this. I was going to say, so what's the way forward? You know, what are we going to do? But I think it's something you have actually already mentioned.
Okay, so there are a couple of things. What we are going to do is not rocket science. People know them. But I think what I'm emphasizing is the role of government, individuals and private
companies.
Government cannot take their hands off this and assume private companies will make the right choices. They will not. So one, there's been a lot of talk about workforce adaptation, whether it is reskilling or redefining work. That has to be a collaborative effort between government, private businesses, and the educational system. You cannot leave that alone for companies. You cannot.
Sure.
So government has to be involved in
because it would affect everybody.
Exactly,
eventually.
In the reskilling process. So, and it has to be done, you know, en masse. That's one. But also, is rethinking the work structures. Yes, even though we are aware that there are certain things AI can do well and it will do it well alone, but we also have to put structures in place that companies design the work environment such that you have collaboration between AI and humans. So that we do not totally eliminate humans. So that's one. Talking about workplace adaptation. Two is the issue of universal basic income or some alternative safety net. It's important. We must acknowledge this. If massive unemployment becomes the norm and countries become productive without humans, how do you take care of those humans? And that's where universal basic income comes in. You can pay everybody some type of salary or safety nets. You understand? It could be tax credit, wage subsidies, whatever. But these things have to be considered now.
Thought about.
Exactly.
Structures put in place.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And lastly, is the individual responsibility. Continuous learning is important. No one can afford to remain stagnant. Individuals must take ownership of their future by continuously learning and upskilling to remain relevant. Adaptation is key in this era that we are entering. It's very key. So I think these are some of the things. Like I said, it's not as if what I'm saying is it's different or new. My view is that, I'll say it again, individuals, private institutions, private businesses, and the government need to work hand in hand to address these issues.
It's food for thought. Interesting. Okay, so my question now is, what are the skills that you think humans, you know, as workers, have to, you know, take on? What skills will now be required? Because we're already in an AI-driven economy.
Yeah, we are.
Yes. So what new skills do you think will be required, and how can we actually facilitate transformation in the workforce?
I think both discussions with Laolu and Danny, I think this came up.
Okay.
So we'll just listen to an excerpt from their interview. Then I would, at the end of the roundup with some additional thoughts.
Okay.
So let's listen to Laulu first.
Back then when I work on projects, I will need like six people, like PMs and quality assurance personnel. I need somebody to do the front end, back end design. Right now, the role of project management is heavily disrupted because from the requirement gathering to fine tuning the this thing or the creative stories, everything cannot be done by computer. Even testing, the test strategy, methodologies you use to confirm if something is good or not, cannot be automated. What that means is that you need to find how to leverage this new strength to do much more, right? Or you would just be in that what's it called? Category of people who keep saying this thing cannot take our job, it's a lie, you know, it's just like it's a phase, it's gonna go away. Some people said about the internet. I said, oh no, it doesn't have capability to disrupt, just like many other great inventions, in no time will be out. I want people to start seeing the great threats and the opportunity provided. For example, security, cyber security is now redefined because if you call a computer breach as people taking advantage of vulnerability of a system, so what do you do when another system takes advantage of another system? What do you call that? How do you attack that? Right? You know, when you define murder as human being killing another person, how do you now define when an autonomous system is doing the same thing? Right? So a lot of things are about to be redefined because they're not the same, right? On the ethics, on the policies, on the security, on the job, every single thing is now being disrupted. Maybe if you are very good at, you know, scouting some of the opportunity, it might just be time for you to start learning, you know, AI side of security, right? Or AI side of legal. Or every other thing that we know that will be disrupted to find a balance. So that's what I strongly believe should be a thing in our day.
Yeah. I think that some of the things that we've been doing that are busy work are going to come off our plates. So from a learning, I'm deep into learning right now, so I'm going to talk specific, a little bit about learning. But from a learning perspective, L&D professionals spend lots of time curating content and creating content and managing, you know, the backend databases of people and figuring out who's done what and how they've done it. And that's been largely a manual process until now. That's going to change. And so a lot of the sort of higher level work that can be automated is going to come off our plates, which frees us up to do all kinds of new things. So if I had to put in place a set of skills for L&D and HR professionals in general, it would be adaptability and flexibility, open-mindedness to make sure that they can adapt these tools. And then I would focus on sort of the higher level skills, the people skills that can't necessarily be accomplished by AI. So for example, I think people skills and connective skills are going to become really, really important in the next little while. I think strategic skills are going to become important. I think ability to look at data that's been analyzed by AI and determine the credibility of it is going to become really important. I think seeing around corners, so to speak, is also going to become really important. And so I think HR professionals, and not just HR professionals, probably all employees need to develop some of these higher level skills because we're going to take some of the stupid work off their plates. They're gonna free up to do those things. And if they don't develop these skills, they might be at risk if a machine can do it.
So though Danny Johnson was specifically talking to L&D professionals, you know, but those her comments also apply to all employees. So she mentioned a couple of, she talked about adaptability and flexibility, open-mindedness, you know, people and connectivity skills, strategic skills, ability to get insight from data, seeing around the corners. What you typically would refer to as human-centric skills, you know. I think Laulu also mentioned learning the tools, be familiar with the AI tools. Now, this is what I'm going to add to it. The best description I have come across about learning AI skills from a guy, Ethan Mollick. He's the author of Co-Intelligence. And I'm going to read what he said. He said, everyone wants to teach AI skills, but nobody really knows what AI skills are. Mm-hmm. I mean, so accurate. Let alone what they will be in the future. You remember what I said? We really don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's uncertain.
So when you hear people telling you with certainty that this is what's going to happen, be skeptical. Now, Ethan Mollick goes on to suggest, for now, AI skills closely resemble the skills of a great manager. And this is why. Because for now, what AI will do for us will be, AI will be like an assistant. Okay. So the skills you really need to work with AI is a great manager who has an assistant. So he was talking about delegation skills, clear communication, understanding strength and weaknesses, division of labor, knowing what you can do and what AI can do, project management, and providing effective feedback. So these are the skills that he recommends. Now, this is my summary on this particular. Think of AI as your executive assistant, a very smart and capable executive assistant, often better than you in certain tasks. So the key isn't just learning programming or prompt engineering or AI tools. Yes, but that's not the issue. It's about mastering how to collaborate with these intelligent assistants to enhance your productivity and decision making. That should be the focus.
That's the only way we will not be eradicated.
Exactly, for me.
It's been a very packed, full part one of this episode. And there's been so much to learn, actually. I think the summary for me will be, just like you said in the beginning, that clarity, that understanding that AI is not just a tool.
Yeah, it's not.
If I can use the word, you know, it's like a competition. If I can use the word. So it's time to really sit up, reskill, re-strategize, because we have to live in that reality that AI is here. The future is uncertain, so everyone must adapt. We can't be ignorant of, you know, what is happening and leverage on AI itself, just like you mentioned now, developing as things are coming, learning, so that in the future it's not just AI and then we are just sidelined. So I think that's one of the very strong things that I heard from all of the discovery that you brought to us today.
So, I mean, I will share my concern again. My concern is that there's still a lot we do not know
about AI.
And I think governments need to take this very serious, because the impact, we'll talk a bit of that in
second part,
but the impact of what we are experiencing, if governments do nothing, it will not
huge impact on the nation.
Yes, on nations. And I'll share this. There was an AI summit that was held in Paris, I think last month. They held it, was it last year or 2 years ago? You had Joe Biden and Rishi Sunak, you know. And if you look at the theme of that AI summit, compared to the theme of this AI summit, you will see what I'm talking about. In that particular summit, there was a lot of caution. There was a lot about what safeguards we need to put in place in ensuring that this doesn't get out of hand. This year's summit, it was all about, how would AI make us better, more productive? And nobody talked about the safety concerns anymore. That, for me, is a concern.
That's true. But, you know, I'm hopeful that, you know, government hears this and takes it up. Thank you so much for the enlightening information that you have brought to us today. And we would also like to thank our guests, Laolu Ajose and Danny Johnson, as well. I'm sure that you have learned one or two things from this part. And if you have listened up to this point, it's not over. There's a part two. Please, there's a part two. So stay tuned. Look forward to the second part of this particular episode. As always, this podcast is edited and the sound is produced by Joshua Praise, and the soundtrack is an original music of Justo Christos. The poster is designed by Faith Folari and Joseph Okafo. Please don't forget to share this with your friends, your family, drop a comment, let the world know this, you know, this discovery that is Collaborare Work Series. Thank you so much, and see you again in part 2.
Bye.
Bye.